Welcome back to Canna Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver top headlines in cannabis and hear experts weigh in on the impact these stories are having on the industry. I'm your host, Abby Kaufman. So despite the challenges of 2020, the hemp industry remains poised for strong growth in 2021 and the years ahead. To gain some insight into the hemp industry, New Frontier Data, along with Hemp Benchmarks and Blue Sky Hemp Ventures, recently published a new report, The U.S. Hemp Market Landscape, Cannabinoids, Grain, and Fiber, which we will be unpacking during today's episode. So to weigh in on the findings from this report, we are joined by industry expert Ian Laird, who is the Chief Financial Officer and General Counsel for Hemp Benchmark. Ian, welcome to Canna Week.
Thank you, Abby. Happy to join in and look forward to it.
We are happy to have you here as well. And so along with Ian, we are also joined by two internal experts, Canna Week regular and Chief Knowledge Officer John Caglia, as well as making his Canna Week debut, Trevor Grode, who is a data analyst here at New Frontier Data. Trevor, John, thank you both for joining today.
Delighted to be here. So, thank you for having us.
Wonderful. Well, so we have a lot to cover. So let's kick things off with the increasingly popular cannabinoid CBD. Annual spending on CBD in the United States is expected to total an estimated $3.8 billion for 2020 and has reached nearly universal recognition by the American public. So, Ian, do you expect that CBD will remain a dominant force in the market, or will other minor cannabinoids continue to increase their relative market share?
Well, I think over time, we can expect the minor cannabinoids to become more popular as people get more educated about the various benefits of the minor cannabinoids. CBG was the most popular minor cannabinoid before the emergence of Delta 8 this year. Based on our data, about 15% of the planted acreage was for CBG this year. We don't think it's translated into directly greater sales of CBG. CBG sales seem to be somewhat restrained, and it's probably a combination of a lack of education, probably some residual COVID hangover. But clearly, education is going to be the key to continued growth for the minor cannabinoids.
Absolutely. Trevor, do you have any thoughts on the continued prevalence of CBD as it relates to other cannabinoids going forward?
Yes. Well, we've seen enough at this point to say that there are promising medical applications both for CBD and for some minor cannabinoids. And as more research comes out, we expect more pharmaceutical applications to come out with it. There was more than $500 million worth of sales of Epidiolex in 2020. Epidiolex is the first pharmaceutical that was made based on the CBD molecule. And we expect more pharmaceutical applications like that in the future. So the question is, at this point, is not whether minor cannabinoids have a future in the marketplace, but rather that if that future includes consumer products or is relegated to the medical side of things.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. John, anything that you'd like to add in there about any other minor cannabinoids or then their relative market share?
Yeah, just picking up on a couple of points that, on a point that both Ian and Trevor had made, which is this idea of the role that consumer education is going to be in catalyzing the growth of the minor cannabinoids. You know, based on a survey that we did last year, we found that, you know, there was near universal awareness of CBD. About a little more than half the market was aware of THC. But when you looked at familiarity with the minor cannabinoids, it was less than 10% of consumers had heard of any of them. And so even as the industry is seeing, you know, very significant opportunity in commercializing on these minor cannabinoids, I think there's still a very significant consumer awareness gap that needs to be closed. And so any kind of stakeholders who are in the process of trying to build products around these compounds also understand that there's going to need to be a bit of a pull effect by educating consumers to understand what these compounds are, how they can be integrated into their lives, if this market is going to grow into the potential that so many see for these products.
Absolutely. Yeah. Consumer education seems to be a critical component of as the industry continues to grow. We've seen an explosion in demand for D8, THC, even as its regulatory future remains uncertain. So Ian, to what would you attribute DH's recent success? And do you have any expectations for DH's future in the market?
Well, it's clearly the fastest growing segment of the market coming out of basically nowhere. I think last year, very few people had even heard of Delta 8. And I think part of the popularity right now is that it's driven by curiosity. People are curious about the psychoactive effect. It's relatively easy to purchase it online. You don't have to go to a dispensary. You can buy it in some of your gas stations. So it's it can be widely distributed. I think longer term, it's very questionable how it will be regulated. I think John Miller, the head of the U.S. Hemp Roundtable's position is correct on this one. It's within the letter of the law and the spirit. And we think that at some point, the regulators will close the loop there. Certainly, the licensed THC producers don't want to see a lower priced, freely available and widely distributed alternative to Delta 9. So enjoy it while you can. It may become part of the more general offerings in the licensed legal cannabis market. And certainly as descheduling proceeds, and we hope that it moves rapidly now with New York going adult legal, we think Delta 8 will probably fall under a larger cannabis legalization rubric.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Trevor, for some of our listeners who may not know, could you speak to a little bit more about what THC is and kind of its rise to success recently?
Yeah. Delta 8 THC is very similar to its more famous cousin, Delta 9 THC. They're almost chemically identical, but Delta 8 is slightly weaker. Like Ian said, prior to 2021, I mean, very few people were even aware of DH's existence. And once it became common knowledge that there was a psychoactive cannabinoid that could be legally and easily produced from hemp, and that customers were lining up around the block to buy it, we started seeing a lot of processors in the space pile onto it, which is one of the reasons it became so popular. Another reason that it's so popular is because the market for CBD is so oversupplied, because regulatory inaction has been really constraining growth on that side. A lot of processors see D8 as a really useful outlet for some of their CBD extracts. And because of that, it's gotten a lot cheaper. We know from Ian's data, from Hemp Benchmarks data, that since August of 2020, the price of Delta 8 has dropped by more than 45%, and that's helped drive its popularity. I absolutely agree with Ian with regards to its future. At the end of the day, the reason that D8 is so popular is because it's psychoactive. A lot of it is being sold in states that don't have legal cannabis markets. And, you know, it really only persists because it was overlooked during the 2018 Farm Bill. I think if you had a time machine and you could go back and talk to lawmakers in 2018 and let them know that they were about to legalize a psychoactive substance that's almost chemically identical to the more famous THC, then I think they absolutely would have taken steps to regulate its sale and production. And I think that is absolutely on the horizon for its future.
Interesting. John, anything that you'd like to add about Delta 8 THC?
Yeah, just a word of caution for folks who are trying to get into the game now. You know, the window is closing, and on two fronts. You know, as Hemp Benchmarks data shows, there's been a dramatic price decline in the wholesale value of Delta 8. And because the barriers to participation, the barriers to entry into this market are relatively low, you know, it's a relatively simple kind of biochemical process to turn CBD into Delta 8, means that people are going to be flooding into this space while they see a market opportunity. So this combination of a lot more people coming into this space and trying to capitalize on the market is going to continue to apply acute downward price pressure, coupled with the fact that as market momentum builds, regulatory intervention is almost inevitable. So, you know, the window to make hay on D8, I think, think is closing as margins start to get compressed and then as regulatory constraints start to get affected. We're not quite there yet. There's probably still a few sunshiny days ahead, but I think anyone coming into this space now should be well forewarned that this was a time bound opportunity, and it is going to have a season.
Excellently put. So speaking of closing windows, of course, hemp-derived cannabinoids are subject to regulatory oversight. And regulatory inaction from various federal agencies has likely slowed growth in the CBD market. Ian, how impactful has regulatory inaction been for the industry's expansion? And do you expect action in 2021?
It's certainly been a complicating factor. The USDA's interim final rules presented some very serious issues to the industry that had to be ironed out, and were ironed out to some degree in the final rules, but that caused a lot of states to continue under the 2014 Farm Bill. So now you have kind of a hodgepodge of regulations across the state, which are difficult to reconcile. There's not kind of a uniform standard. It's not as balkanized, obviously, as the legal cannabis market, but it creates issues for processors and producers, interstate commerce. Flowered sales are allowed some places, not others. So certainly having a more uniform and national approach to regulatory issues would be a positive. The DEA seems to have inserted itself wherever it possibly can, even though it wasn't part of the Farm Bill. So that puts back some additional headwind, having the requirement that samples be tested in DEA labs is certainly a bottleneck, and even though it's been postponed until the end of 2022, it still presents significant issues. Obviously, the big one that we're all waiting for is the FDA rulemaking. I think all of us anticipated it long before today. COVID certainly perhaps interrupted the regulatory process, and certainly the FDA wants to be thoughtful about their regulations. I kind of follow along with Scott Gottlieb, the prior head of the FDA's position that really you should bifurcate the regulations into consumer wellness supplement goods, which should be probably limited by dosage, should be generally recognized as safe and widely available. Versus the pharmaceutical rules, which should be as stringent as they are for other drugs. So we'll see where they go. I don't anticipate anything in the near term, but certainly it's been an anchor on the market.
Definitely. And Trevor, are there any regulatory efforts or expectations that you have as it relates to the hemp-derived cannabinoids in 2021?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Biden administration is widely expected to be more pro-hemp than their predecessor, but the fact is that there still isn't even an FDA chief that's been approved by Congress. And furthermore, Amy Abernathy, who was the most senior member of the FDA's CBD task force, just resigned her post. So while the industry is certainly hoping for friendly and clear regulations from the CBD or from the FDA to come out soon, there's just no guarantee that that will happen anytime in the near term.
And then, John, any thoughts on the Farm Bill, the new FDA rules? What are your expectations for 2021 on the regulatory front?
Well, I think both Ian and Trevor have covered some of the key issues evolving at the federal level. Just one of the things that I think that is still an unresolved issue at the state level is how hemp-derived products can be sold in or participate in the high THC kind of regulated marijuana markets. We were just discussing in a meeting earlier today the idea that the hemp sector is going to be regulated under the marijuana governing authority in New York, which is the first state we've seen kind of take this idea of putting hemp and marijuana under the same umbrella. There's a broader issue that states have been wrestling with, which is, can you allow hemp-based products, hemp-derived CBD, to be used to produce products that are then going to be sold in high THC dispensaries? I think there's a significant opportunity there. And one which consumers seem to be responding positively to, in large part because it actually makes the CBD products being sold in dispensaries less expensive than if they were being produced using if they were being produced by licensed marijuana growers. The economies of scale just tend to be different there. So at the state level, even as we wait for resolution of the broader federal implications, there's still some regulatory issues at the state level that haven't been fully resolved yet. And one of them is how easy it is going to be to get CBD derived from hemp sold and included in products that are being sold in high THC dispensaries. I think that's going to be a win-win for both sides of the market, but regulators seem to continue to try and maintain that bifurcation.
Yeah, that's a great point. It sounds like there's a lot of waiting game on both the federal and the state level, but some opportunities exist within there as well. So to kind of switch gears, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, in my home state of New York, even prior to the recent legislation approving adult use marijuana, hemp-based CBD could be sold in licensed dispensaries, and some of the MSOs and state operators in New York were including hemp-based CBD products in their offerings in their dispensaries, which is another great distribution channel, an education channel for CBD consumers.
Yeah, Maryland just proposed a rule to do the same thing.
And so I guess to kind of switch gears from the regulatory side, we'll talk about licensing. So licensed CBD acreage quintupled between 2018 and 2019, which is when it peaked before declining in 2020. So that left many producers struggling to find processors and facing challenges getting their products to market. Ian, from your line of work and all what you've seen at Hemp Benchmarks, how have processors had to adapt to a market with such high volumes of biomass?
In putting together our price assessments and trying to forecast future pricing, obviously the key is supply and demand. So we've been tracking the supply side of the market very closely while New Frontier and others look at the demand side. Certainly, there was a huge rush and pile into the market between 2018 and 2019, with permitted acreage soaring to over 580,000 acres. Now, we go through and look at permitted acres and then figure out what percentage of the permitted acres are planted and what percentage of the planted acres are actually harvested to get to the actual supply of biomass. And it's significantly lower than, for example, the 580,000 acres that were permitted in 2019, where we calculate about 110,000 acres were actually harvested and processable. Rolling to 2020, the permitted acreage dropped to about 420,000 acres. There was a higher percentage of grain and fiber there, probably about 15%, so less CBD. We've collected harvest reports from the states that have put them together so far, and we have about 19 states, 40% representing 40% of the permitted acres, and they only had a 15.7% harvest rate, which would imply that there's about 67,000 acres harvested this year. So down 40%+ from 2019, but still dramatically more biomass produced than the market can consume at current levels. A lot of inventory around from 2019, 2020. Some of the inventory has been degraded and has probably been written off, but still a significant supply of biomass. When you look at through to the processors, there's really plenty of processing capacity to handle all the biomass produced, but the market doesn't need it. The processors don't have the working capital to go out and buy biomass. There are very few biomass sales transactions going on now. There are still some splits and tolls, but the processors are sitting on large inventories of distillate and isolate that they've been producing over the past year and a half. So the market still hasn't reached equilibrium based on license applications for production that we're seeing rolling in from the states this spring. A significant decrease in licensed producers, so we anticipate a further fall in supply. And as the CBD and markets and the minor cannabinoid markets continue to build, eventually supply and demand will come into equilibrium. We are seeing some price stability through the spring, albeit at very reduced levels. But I think some processors are just refusing to sell their isolate, you know, at bottom prices and are holding on for what they consider to be reasonable prices.
Interesting. And then, so Trevor, do you have any thoughts on kind of this question of supply versus demand and kind of the incongruities there, especially as it relates to processors?
Yes. Well, CBD will survive this price crash. It's here to stay. But the fact is that a lot of companies making it right now are not going to be here in the future. There is, as Ian said, a pretty significant oversupply of processing capacity that the market doesn't need. And if the market doesn't need it, it's not going to be there forever. So there's somewhat of a, I don't want to say price war, but there's various processors competing to outlast other processors. And eventually, I think we're going to see a lot of consolidation in this area.
Absolutely. So as both Trevor and Ian mentioned, John, oversupply caused a crash in biomass prices in 2020, introducing further uncertainty into a relatively new market. So John, do you expect another year of oversupply and downward price pressure, or will prices start to stabilize?
No, and I think Ian and I have actually spent quite a bit of time talking about this. It's possible we will continue to see some additional price pressure, but we should be getting pretty close to the floor now. As you start for an emerging market, by the time you start getting to year three, year four of operation, that's about the time that you start to see to have much better visibility into the market operations, much clearer lines of sight across the supply chain, and kind of much more effective protocols by which to determine how much should be produced based on retail sell-through. Just building on that point a little bit, one of the huge challenges this sector has faced, and I think Hench Benchmarks has had the unenviable task of trying to get the heads around this issue, is trying to collect the data that allows the market to see how much is being grown, how much is being processed, so that the rest of the supply chain can plan accordingly. And then inversely, so that growers can plan their next cultivation cycles effectively. This was actually something that was easier to do. Tracking the scale of production was actually much easier to do in the legal marijuana market because many governments required that data to be collected. But on the hemp side, which is a little more loosely regulated, you haven't had some of these governance requirements in place requiring this data to be collected. So, you know, we really kind of applaud Hemp Benchmarks for the work that they're doing to try and create clear lines of sight in the kind of market volume trading in this market. While there's still a lot of kind of work to be done to dial this in at the national level, at the state level, it's a really critical step in the right direction to ensuring supply chain efficiency in this economy.
Just a final point on that. I think John and the New Frontier team all kind of aligned with our view that over time the grain and the fiber markets will continue to grow significantly. With fiber ultimately being the largest market, it's going to take a longer time for the fiber side of the market to develop, to rebuild the processing infrastructure, the end markets, the supply chain. Grain, I think, will move more rapidly from a growth perspective. The markets are somewhat established to date. Canada's been a large producer. So I think we'll see significant movement in the grain market, as you'll see in the New Frontier report. The fiber market's going to take longer to develop, but looking down 5-10 years, it's going to be by far the largest part of the hemp derived product market.
Yeah, that's a great point as well. Thank you. And so, Trevor, do you have any thoughts on do you expect another year of oversupply and downward price pressure, or what are your thoughts on prices eventually stabilizing?
Ian could probably speak to that better than I can. But I think farmers have had 2 years of experience now growing hemp, 2 seasons of growing hemp. And I think most of them have learned their lesson, which is it's not a good idea to grow if you don't have a contract in place from the get-go. We saw a lot of farmers lose their shirts when they sunk a lot of resources into growing hemp without having a buyer identified and not being able to unload their product. And I don't think that's going to persist as severely as it has the past 2 years.
I agree with Trevor, and even unfortunately, even farmers that had contracts, often the counterparties couldn't live up to their end of the bargain. So there was pain all around. In some states, I think 90% of the farmers were reported to have lost money. Now, farmers are becoming more efficient. I think the cost of production is coming down. Commodities typically trade towards the marginal cost of production. And when people start losing money, they start exiting the industry. We know many farmers who grew planted less acreage in 2020 than 2019, and they're not planting any acreage now. They still have plenty of last year's harvest to work off. So I think what we really need is to get the growth that we anticipated in the CBD market, which has really been the driver of the hemp market to date. And it's just been constrained, I think, by lack of regulation and some restrictions imposed by the COVID lockdowns, et cetera.
Ian, to that point, I was reflecting on this after our webinar last week, and we had a brief conversation about supply chain and logistics, so the transportation and distribution of both biomass and derived products across the country. You know, so it's clear that there's a huge amount of excess inventory sitting in the market, but it's not uniformly distributed across the country. Do you think as we start to see farmers dialing back how much they're producing this year, potentially into next year, that you are going to see greater interest in kind of shipping product across the country to fill in a product availability in parts of the country where there may not be as much of a glut as they are in other parts of the market?
Well, there certainly is a lot of interest in transportation logistics of hemp to give farmers the flexibility they need to move the crop where it's needed. And a lot of processors do source biomass from out of state through trusted suppliers. So certainly the movement's very important. And we publish every month a kind of a transportation pricing outline from various markets. Having said that, I think the larger processors have ample access to biomass with farmers that they either co-op with or with farmers with fields that they control themselves. John, we talked about kind of the two-tiered market last week. You have the large producers that are really geared up for scalable production for the big CPG companies when they come into the market. A lot of equipment, a lot of heavy capex, and enormous scalability. And then you have the smaller local craft producers who are probably going to be processing and producing brands for their local markets. You'll have Vermont organic guys selling, like Ben and Jerry started in Vermont out of a gas station. The CPG companies haven't really come in any substantial scale simply because they won't do it till the FDA clarifies the rules and regulations. But when they do come in, there's going to be a handful of the largest survivors who can really service their needs and satisfy their supply chain requirements.
It sounds like there's quite a few obstacles and also lots of room for opportunity there. So for our final question, Ian, I'd love to hear any final thoughts or takeaways or fun facts, predictions that you have personally or that were uncovered over the course of creating this report with New Frontier Data?
Yes, I think what we all realize is that people piled into this market without a lot of hard data. And like with almost any emerging commodity, folks had to create their own supply chain. So there was a lot of vertically integrated companies, a lot of farmers invested in processing equipment, maybe started their own brands. And those are three very different skill sets. I think as the industry matures, you'll kind of see people do what they do best. The fun fact for me really is I think there's just tremendous potential in the cannabis plant in general. Hemp has given us a legal way to start exploiting that in a much wider fashion than just THC. The THC market existed. It's been around since I was a kid in scale. And now it's just transitioning to a legal market, whereas the hemp market is really an opportunity to rebuild what was once a very vibrant market. I think it's a very important crop from a climate change perspective as a carbon sequesterer. I think it's a tremendous regenerative agricultural commodity. And for me, it's just fun to get in the field and see what the farmers are able to do with this crop. And it'll be great to see how the rest of the industry can kind of catch up and create the end products that the market really requires.
Excellently put. Trevor, what about you? Are there any predictions or any particular aspects of the hemp industry that you will be watching as the rest of 2021 unfolds?
Yeah, well, speaking of the potential of the cannabis plant, I always tell people to keep an eye out on the genetic segment of this industry. You have to understand, hemp was illegal for 81 years. I mean, it missed the almost the entire 20th century. It missed the advent of modern crop science. If you think of a corn crop in 1937 and a corn crop in 2020, I mean, the difference is immense. And obviously, some of those innovations were non-genetic, but there's about 81 years of innovations that are ready to kind of just break through this dam of prohibition that's been set up. And I think we're going to see really amazing things come out of the genetic side of this industry.
Yeah, that's a very interesting side of it as well. And then lastly for you, John, what are your predictions or thoughts or any final thoughts to share with our listeners today?
Yeah, just a word of caution for anyone who's thinking about coming into this space. And, you know, there's so much opportunity for all of the reasons that both Ian and Trevor have articulated. But particularly as you think about the economics of hemp, across virtually every sector of the plant, we have seen, in some cases, mild, in some cases, really acute downward price pressure. So we just always caution that as you're coming into this space, even as you're seeing early on in many of these markets, phenomenally high margins, plan for where the market is going, not where it currently is. It is almost invariable that you're going to see much greater competition, much more disruptive innovation, and as a consequence of both of those things, much more acute downward price pressure. And so as a result, the operators who tend to be most successful over the long term are those who come into the space with operations that are optimized for efficiency, that know how to run lean, can work on really, really tight margins, because it means that their kind of profitability ends up being phenomenally kind of heightened during the periods when margins are highest or when sale or when prices are highest, but it means they're also able to continue to run a viable business even as you start to see that downward compression. It is inevitable that you'll start to see that. It just takes longer in some sectors than others. So plan for where the market is going, not where it currently is.
And that is a sentiment that has been echoed on CannaWeek in our podcast, I know, several times. So if you're interested in a resource to help you plan for where the market is going as where it currently is, be sure to access your complimentary copy of our latest hemp report by visiting newfrontierdata.com/analyst-reports. That's newfrontierdata.com/analyst-reports. A huge thank you to all three of our guests for appearing today. And as always, thank you to our listeners for tuning in. If you haven't already, be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. And I'm your host, Abby Kaufman, and I'll see you next week.
New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.